The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show Q&A edition for this week. And the intro was correct. We do have Jim on the show today. He's been a little hit or miss, but he has returned from his adventures back east and is joining me in the deluxe penthouse studio again.
Is that what we call this?
Yes, yes. It is.
It's good to be back. It's good to be back. I missed the area. I was just getting used to it and looking around, but it's also good to be back here in Colorado. The drive from Ohio / Kentucky to Colorado went well. I got back just in time to experience some outrageously hot, dry weather, but this weekend it may actually cool down
and rain.
Water is going to fall from the sky, exactly. Allegedly, in Colorado in July or August. Which is about as rare as
July. This July has been pretty dry. We had a nice wet spring. That was nice. Got my grass going, but it's been a little struggle keeping it.
Yeah, I heard on the radio today, the weather person was saying that Denver, I guess Denver's the measure for Colorado, but Denver got a half inch of rain in July.
The whole month, yeah.
That gives you an idea, folks, of how dry Colorado is. But anyways, it's good to be back. My garden, it's doing okay. Some of my carrots didn't do well this year, anyone who gardens know carrots are easy. And for some reason, my carrots didn't do well this year, and neither did my onions. Some of the two easiest veggies I grow were not doing good. My tomatoes, for some bizarre reason, I rotated them this year to a new part of the yard. And man, they're like on steroids. They have done really well. But my carrots and onions, not so much.
Do you, at the end of the season, do you
question why I do this?
No, yes. No. Do you leave your carrots in the ground?
I do, and then I harvest them all winter long.
Yeah, I didn't. You're the only the second person I know of who does that, and
it works.
I was a middle-aged adult before I realized that people did that. I never grew carrots growing up, so somebody offered me some carrots from their garden in like January, and I'm like, where have you been storing these things? He says, I just picked them out of the ground. So how the heck can you? And he just covers it with like 3 feet of straw. This was in a more northern environment than here. You may not have to do that down here in Colorado.
Down here, I use straw. Yeah. I don't use 3 feet, probably about a foot of straw covers the ground. Mm. And then I built some cold frames, and I'll throw a cold frame on top of that, and then I put an odd cut sheet of greenhouse plastic on top of that, and it never freezes, and I just go out and literally can pull the carrots right out of the ground because the ground doesn't freeze.
Yeah, yeah, and they were great. They tasted like perfectly fresh carrots.
Much better than harvesting them and trying to keep them all
for
winter long.
Yeah, that's awesome.
All right, well, let's just dive right into the questions and forget all that and move forward, shall we?
Sure.
All righty. So we're going to lead, as we always do, with some Social Security questions. We've got a handful of them, I think about three. And you ready for the first one?
I am.
It is from the good state of Kentucky.
Coincidentally? Or
coincidental.
Did you do that on purpose?
No, this is definitely coincidental because the question itself is several months old.
Oh, Nice.
But it says, hi, Jim and Chris, a Social Security question from Kentucky. I have been listening for a month nonstop. So I guess he's a new listener. Nonstop. Wow. I've been listening for a month nonstop. Great content. Keep it up. I'm actually writing on behalf of my mother-in-law. She was born in July of 1965. She's nearing her retirement in a few more years at her state job. So I guess she works for the state of Kentucky. My father-in-law is deceased, and I was wondering if my mother-in-law could begin collecting survivor benefits from Social Security while she waits for her maximum payout from Social Security.
Probably. And the, what I'm saying probably because the state job we'd have to look into, or you'd have to investigate, is that state job participating in Social Security or not? If not, she might be subject or affected by GPO, government pension offset, which affects your ability to collect survivor benefits or spousal benefits. WEP, its cousin, affects your own benefits. But here you're asking specifically about survivor. So let's assume for a moment, because I think from the question it implies that she could get her own benefit or his, which I'm crossing my fingers means there's no GPO involved here, but it wasn't directly addressed. I just wanted to mention that could throw a monkey wrench into this whole thing. But that what you're proposing is a very popular approach. I'm sorry to hear that your father-in-law passed away, but that does open the door for your mother-in-law to collect a survivor benefit as young as age 60. I'm not saying she should do it then, but as young as age 60. Now, the earnings test does affect people if you're claiming this benefit prior to your full retirement age. So if you're continuing to work past 60, that's maybe unavailable to you. But let's assume you're not working at that point. Claiming the survivor benefit first and letting your own grow until 70 is very popular. Now, the exact strategy you want to use in combining these will have to take into account, is she continuing to work or not? What's the survivor benefit size versus her own benefit size? So there could be some nuances as to exactly when to turn on each of these. There's always the question too of should there be delay to 70? That's always a question that needs to be answered in this. It's our proposal or our suggestion that people consider it is mostly due to the survivor benefit issues here, unless she's remarried. If she's still single, there's no survivor benefit to be left behind to another person. So that's always... I'm mentioning all these things because all these things should be looked into before deciding on your final strategy. But the general approach you're describing, a lot of people do and is very popular because it kind of pays her to wait. Normally, to get the maximum benefit, she would have to forego collecting anything until she turned 70. And at that point, it would be maximized. She'd turn it on. Turning on the survivor benefit does not trigger any activity on her own benefit. So you are allowed to turn that on and be paid then to wait for yours. You're collecting something along the way, which makes, you know, the pain of waiting to maximize your own benefit much, much lower. So, I hopefully she can, but there's that GPO thing to worry about since you said she was at a state job. And I don't know in Kentucky off the top of my head if they're participating in Social Security or not. That would be something I could look up, but you could look it up as well. Or just ask her and find out if that is the case.
Perfect. Okay. Excellent. This next question is from a Floridian, actually a physician down in the fine state of Florida. Now, that place is humid this time of year, much more. I will say, we didn't talk about the humidity earlier. The last day I was there, I left on a Monday, so it was that Sunday. It was unbearable. It is my little sweat emoji. It was off the chart. It was, and even the locals were saying it was an unbearable, unbearable day. Mm-hmm. But prior to that, honestly, that first day I was there was unbearable. The last day, kind of like how God sandwiched it in for me. And everything in between, there were some days, Chris, was downright beautiful. But most of the time, mm-hmm. you could feel much more humidity. But oh my God, on Sunday, it was a killer. If it was like that mm-hmm. every day, I think you would have won the bet. I would never set foot in Kentucky again.
Yeah, and I do want to say, because I suspect, although I haven't gotten any feedback with people, you know, chiding me for throwing Kentucky under the bus, you know, and then complaining about living there. I will admit, the week I was there, I placed my entire judgment of that area on 1 week. But it was so impactful to me in a negative way that it stuck with me. But I admit that that week was a whole week of what you just described. Every day, even the locals were complaining, and I was outside all day. So I didn't have the refuge of the air conditioning. So basically, in my mind, if my memory is correct, I lived through hell for about 5 days, and it happened to be there. So now that's how I view it. You know, that's how I view that area. I'm sure there's many other times where it's perfectly beautiful, and that's why a lot of people live there, yeah. and that's great. So I do want to say that.
Yeah, there were some days that were just absolutely gorgeous, but the last day... If that's what you experienced, and I'm guessing it was, yeah. if you experienced for 5 days what mm-hmm. I experienced for one, yeah, I can see how you said, go yeah. in the July, you'll never go back.
Yeah.
But I am going to go back, so just mm-hmm. want you to know that.
Good.
I got some apartments I'm waiting mm-hmm. on, and if I can mm-hmm. rent an apartment, I will divide my time. So there will be the studio in my house, the studio in the attic, mm-hmm. and of course, we'll call it the...
Eastern studio, maybe?
Is that Eastern? I think it's Mid-Atlantic, aren't they? No, I'm Midwest.
Well, you're east of us.
So. Well, yeah, they are east of us, so we could call it the Eastern, because it is definitely east of Colorado.
Yeah.
But I kept calling them. I thought I was calling the Mid-Atlantic, and they kept correcting me. They call themselves the Midwest. I always thought, like, Iowa was and Nebraska was the Midwest, but I don't know.
It depends on who you talk to.
True. All right, well, let's get to Florida. That's okay. This little tirade started with this guy from Florida. Yep. So he is a physician, folks, and he begins. Hi, Jim and Chris. I'm a big fan of you guys, and I listen 2 times a week as I drive to work. Here's a question that you may not, as of yet, addressed. I'm a physician, 67 years old, and recently had a patient who used to work for the Social Security Administration for the past 10 years, and he seemingly has an excellent amount of knowledge. And since I'm a friendly guy, we got to talking, and he was curious when he found out I have a son that is 14 years old. He asked if I am receiving my monthly Social Security check for him, and I said no, because I did not know I was entitled to any. I have not started drawing my Social Security, and I was going to continue accumulating my delayed retirement credits. I would assume he was going to go to 70 because mm-hmm. he's already 67. He didn't say, but
right.
Delayed retirement credits, folks, in case you don't know, that's the 8% a year you get every year you delay past your full retirement age. His full retirement age is 66, he wrote in his letter. So he would get 8% a year for 4 years if he waits to 70.
Right. And just, I want to add one thing on that because people misconstrue what that really means. It's an 8% increase in your lifetime benefit paid as long as you live. And if there's a survivor, you know, that goes to your spouse as long as they live as well. So it's not an 8%, it's not effectively an 8% return. People view it as that, and that is not what that means. This is much more powerful than an 8% return.
Oh, absolutely.
Just want to mention that. So if you're in your mind, you're thinking, they're giving me an 8% return if I delay. Nope. They're giving you 8% higher benefits for the rest of your life, which have a value, especially in low interest rate environment like we have today, much, much higher than an 8% return. We've talked about that more. I don't want to deviate any further, but I just wanted to mention that because people, I think, misinterpret that 8% thing.
Absolutely. So then he continues. It's a very long email, folks, and I'm trying to jump around it and just get to the pertinent items. This gentleman that he was chatting with, his patient, still works for the Social Security Administration. So he says, the following day, I called him while he was at his computer. And the information he gave me was interesting. Turns out my PIA, primary insurance amount, do you want to take a quick second and explain what that is? Or
Yeah, that's the think of that as the benefit at your full retirement age, and
which for him was 66.
Right, and that is the benefit amount that drives all other benefits on your record. So it's a very important number we always look at. The PIA is the starting amount for all discussions.
Correct. So he says, my PIA, excuse me, and if you want to write this down, Chris, you can, was $2,883, meaning my minor child would receive $1,441. If I delay my benefit until age 70, by benefit he means his retirement benefit, folks. If I delay my benefit until 70, I will receive $3,805. So the question is, do I stop earning my delayed retirement credits now, and should I turn on my Social Security and therefore receive my benefit plus my child will receive the $1,441 until he reaches 18? And remember, his child is only 14, folks, so he can get 4 years of that. Or do you think I should continue to wait and max out my delayed retirement credit? And he did give us some key information, Chris, as I pondered this question. He said maybe some background financial information will be helpful. I would have to say I am fairly financial stable, and we, so he must be married, will have a four-legged stool to fund our retirement. I am going to have my Social Security benefit, a government pension paying me $60,000 a year, plus an additional $2,600 a month from an annuity that I have already turned on. Plus, I have $2 million in my thrift savings plan. That, folks, is kind of the federal government's version of a 401k. We've talked about them before on the show. So when you hear a TSP, just think of a government 401k. It's not a 401k, but think of it that way. So he has $2 million in a TSP, Chris, and another $2 million in a brokerage account, and no debt with two fully paid off homes. Mm-hmm. And when I read all that, I know what I think I would tell this gentleman, but I'm curious to see what you are going to tell this gentleman, and then I'll say if that's what I was thinking as well. But he also does end, and I want to thank him for this. He says, Jim, as for your account of your November 2020 stroke, it was absolutely riveting, and it had a big impact on me as a physician and how I now approach my patients with AFib. Thank you for your openness. I'm sure I'm not the only one who feels that way. I want to thank you for that, doctor, because I openly shared the story of my stroke and what I had to deal with, and the fact that I've been diagnosed with AFib, specifically to get people with AFib to take it seriously. It nearly killed me 7 months ago. So I'm glad to read, Chris, that even for this physician, he's, I guess, reassessing or rethinking how he counsels and deals with his patients with AFib. AFib's a serious, serious condition. Even though you oftentimes feel fine, take it seriously. Okay, that was my little PSA announcement.
Okay. Well, that gave me a little time to crunch some numbers here because I was taking notes as you were going through this. And so just to whittle this down to his choices, essentially, he's asking us if he should, because he has access to this child benefit that he didn't realize, and to clarify, you can, if you're claiming Social Security and have a child, a minor child, under the age of 18 or under the age of 19 and still in high school, so he might actually get this benefit longer depending on when his son graduates from high school. He mentioned his son has a is 14 now, depends on when during the year that happens, etc. So it might go beyond. It's going to go to at least 18, could go as long as to age 19 in this particular case. So because of this extra bonus, if you will, he's now rethinking, should he be continuing to delay? He's delayed a little bit already. He's about to turn 68 here. So let's assume then he's facing the choice of turning on now, which would then forego 2 years of delayed retirement credits on his own benefit, but with the bonus of getting $1,441 a month extra that he's not collecting now, when is, in my mind, this is actually, and not all questions about Social Security are break-even questions, but this one is kind of a break-even question to me. He would forego, if he gets his delayed retirement credits to maximize his own, he's going to give up 2 years of the potential roughly 4 years of child benefit that he could get. 2 years of 1441 is $35,000 roughly, just shy of $35,000. So my question is, that I would ask in this situation is, how much lower is his benefit claiming now, or at 68, which is coming up shortly, versus age 70, and that's $460 a month roughly. In other words, if he waits till 70, he's going to get $460 a month more than if he claims right now. So, but he has to give up the $35,000. Where's the break-even point? It's about 75 months. It's about 6 years. So if he or his wife are expected to live more than 6 years, it's probably best to still get the delayed retirement credits if you're looking at just the Social Security alone. And I think that's a pretty short break-even point, because you're still pretty darn young 6 years from now. So I would probably still get the delayed retirement credits. As far as we always also look at tax implications, maybe if he does things later versus earlier, there's a tax benefit. I think he's going to have 85% of his Social Security scraped in. The good news is the child benefit goes to the child and is going to be received by the child generally tax-free because it'll be attributed to the child instead. So it's only his benefit that's going to be scraped into his tax return. So that's my general assessment. I think he should go ahead and wait till age 70, get the delayed retirement credits, make sure then he's leaving the largest survivor benefit to his wife, because the break-even is not that far away, actually.
I took a little different approach. Mm-hmm. So I started looking at this a little different, I guess is the best way to say
it. I suspected where you're going with this, and I'll let you say what you're going to say. I'm just going to add one little nugget. With everything he described, this decision is actually fairly minor in impact to his overall situation.
True.
So flipping a coin would probably not be a terrible approach either, because as far as impacting on your overall situation, given his other resources. But go ahead.
Yeah, I started looking at it and thinking, well, first of all, I really think you need to do a retirement plan, plain and simple. That will give us an idea on if you need the additional secure income. Chris and I believe, again, passionately in our approach, obviously, or we wouldn't be doing this podcast and we wouldn't have a firm that practices our approach. But we believe that you need lifetime guaranteed income, which Social Security, pension, and annuity comprise that definition. And he has all three, Chris. He has a government pension. He has a private annuity. He said that is paying him $2,600 a month, and he's already turned it on. Plus, he is going to have Social Security. We believe in those sources of income to cover what we call your minimum dignity floor: food, utilities, transportation, housing, and healthcare expenses. I would want to know, Chris, does he need to wait? It may make financial sense to wait. Maybe the if you're going to pay attention to break even and all that other yada, yada, yada stuff, maybe that type of academic analysis makes sense. But I was looking at it at its core. Do you need it? That's the first thing I want to know, doctor. Do you need that income? So if I knew if your FERS pension, your Social Security, and your private annuity would cover your minimum dignity floor for the rest of your life, even if it didn't cover it for the rest of your life, I would be able to, with that information, figure out how much of your $4 million in assets you actually need to dedicate to the shortage, if any. If I had that information, I could then tell you if I feel you should turn it on and claim now or wait. But at heart, as I thought of this recently when I was thinking of this email, I took two different approaches. I said, first, well, wait a minute here. What if he turns it on? He's going to start collecting $2,881 a month, his child $1,400 a month.
No, he's going to get $3,344 a month because he's already collected some 2 years worth of delayed retirement credits.
Ah, okay, thank you. So he's going to be pulling in just about 4,500 a month. What if you started directing that into a college savings account? I don't know if Florida has a deductible 529, but you could start saving in a Florida 529. Now, granted, the $1,400 going to your son is your son's, but this would be a wonderful chance to teach him how to save for his own college. Maybe let him keep $400 a month and have fun with it. Teach him how to spend and save. Maybe whatever parents, you have kids, I don't, but whatever you need to teach children. But he can direct $1,000 a month of that to his own college education, and you can direct over $3,000 a month into a 529, get a little bit of a state of, well, Florida doesn't have an income tax deduction. Yeah. Right. So the 529 is a little questionable if you want to use it or not, but follow some of that logic, folks. This could be money for college. The doctor didn't mention how he was going to pay for his son's college, but this could start forming a lot and continue to pay for it throughout 4 years of college, or 8 years if he's going to be a doctor like you. So that was one approach I had. Mm-hmm. But another approach, all too often when you fixate on break-even periods, you're planning to die. So you're sitting there and you're saying, God, how long do I have to live? In other words, what if I die? That somehow you're going to be short on money, that you're going to lose out. I like to plan for live. I like to plan, what if you lived a long time? How are you going to be able to give even more money to your children or grandchildren? I thought if he doesn't need it, if an analysis shows, Chris, that his FERS pension, his Social Security, and his existing pension cover his minimum dignity floor, you and I have been doing this long enough to know it probably will.
Almost for sure. Mm-hmm.
So I don't think he needs it. What if he turned it on? Again, his son is going to get $1,400. He can either help his son save some of that for his own college or teach his son about saving and spending. He could put some of that in a Roth for his son. There's a lot you can do with that $1,400, assuming the son has a job on the Roth pot. But you can take your $3,000 a month, or $3,300 a month. And what if you started putting that into a second to die guaranteed universal life policy, assuming you don't need it? If the analysis shows your FERS and your private annuity, and maybe you don't need the Social Security right now, you might need it in the future. What I'm saying is you might be able to then create $500,000, $1 million, $1.5 million, or $2 million guaranteed inheritance later to your son and to your grandchildren, maybe to pay for your grandchildren's college, 100% tax-free. These were just ideas going through my head, Chris. I'm not saying he should do this. I'm saying if you did a retirement plan first and figured out what your future from a financial standpoint looks like, then you can start to make some assessment on if you should turn it on early or not. And oftentimes, turning it on early, if you don't need the money, turning it on earlier will allow you perhaps to leverage into an even greater inheritance or great college savings. You could have 4 years of money coming in to help pay for a very expensive college. So that's kind of how I looked at it. I agree with Chris. The break-even isn't that long, but is it worth it? Are you going to need this money at age 70? The difference between what you would get now or at age 70, you're going to need that little extra bit? My gut tells me no. Not with a FERS pension and a private annuity already and a pretty darn good Social Security benefit to begin with, even without getting 3 more years of delayed retirement credits. I don't think those extra delayed retirement credits are going to make or break your retirement. But getting that money earlier and leveraging it either into college or an inheritance might actually create greater wealth. I wouldn't know unless I looked at the numbers. So that's kind of where I would go with it.
I totally understand where you went with that as a broader planning strategy. Those in my mind are things that you should consider whether you have Social Security questions or not. Right, he should be thinking about how he's going to fund college, and if maybe he wants to do an estate planning strategy with the second to die guaranteed universal life policy that we talk about periodically. Those types of things regardless of this. So even if he decides to delay, he should still consider those things out of other cash flows. This isn't, I would suspect as a doctor, he's not barred or unable to do some of these things unless he collects the Social Security now. Well, I might be wrong. I don't know what, you know, his financial situation right now. He focused more on the Social Security and retirement income that he's going to get. So, but yeah, if you can't do those things and you could do them, it enables you to pull off some of those broader financial planning approaches by turning it on. Absolutely, I would connect the two and think about it that way. My mind didn't immediately connect it because of his other resources and my interpretation of his situation. I wasn't figuring he wasn't able to do those things without the Social Security. And then the only reason I'm not a big fan as well, I'm in the same boat with Jim about fixation on the break even overall with Social Security. That is way down on the list. In this particular case, because turning it on earlier versus later, I don't think impacts his overall retirement. I think then it, in my mind, became more of just a financial, more academic decision. And when the break-even turned out to be so low, if the break-even turned out to be like 17 years, I'd say, you know, this is a very different kind of analysis. We probably need to fixate on, you know, how badly do you need the age 70 benefit, particularly as a survivor for your wife, etc. But 6 years from now, not 6 years from, you know, 70, but 6 years from now, he's only going to be, you know, 74. I don't know how old his wife is, but because that was so quick, that kind of made the case for me in my mind. But I totally like where you went with suggesting things he think about.
Okay, perfect. This highlights, folks, there's no right or wrong answer, but It also highlights the importance for all you do-it-yourselfers to having a plan in place. You can't just look at one aspect of your retirement. In this case, should he claim Social Security now or at 70? He was looking at one small aspect. You can't look at one small aspect without looking at the whole picture. Mm-hmm. You have to look at the whole picture, and you have to get an idea. And that's why you need a plan, because you can't look at your situation now and try to answer it. You have to look at what your projected situation in the future is going to be. We know it's going to change. That we know. But at least it gives you a little bit of clarity to make a more informed decision. Yep. So I really push everyone to doing a retirement plan. All you do-it-yourselfers, I know you loathe hiring people and working with them, but sometimes the data and the input that you can get from a good retirement plan, there's a lot of crap plans out there, but in our opinion, from a good retirement plan is invaluable. And I think they need it, this doctor and his wife should do that, because I'm not certain you shouldn't turn it on now and start doing something with that money to leverage even more into your future. Mm-hmm. All right. So we had one more Social Security. Do you want to do that, or do you want to get into non-Social Security questions? I'm easy. Either way.
Let's go ahead and knock it out. And then.
All right.
Up to you, though.
This one is, I don't know where it's from. Kansas City, Missouri. I stayed in Kansas City one night on my trip back, but the Kansas side of Kansas City, not the Missouri side. Not that it
matters. Very confusing to me. I knew it was like that, but I think that's it bothered me. It bothers me for some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah, you're driving around the city, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden Google said, "Welcome to Kansas."
Welcome to Missouri.
And then I turn around and go back to where I came from. Welcome to Missouri. Yeah. You could really drive Google crazy just by going back and forth. Okay, so I'm new to your show, and I enjoy listening on a podcast as I take my daily walk in Kansas City, Missouri. Could you discuss the windfall elimination provision? My wife is employed by a school district, so she will have a pension. I am employed as a city police officer and have a pension. We both do not contribute to Social Security. We are both 44 with 22 years of service. Well, I think they've everything together. So they're both 44. They've both worked as a cop and a teacher for 22 years. We want to retire in 6 years at age 50. Now that could be a whole show within itself. So we'll skip over that part. I plan on working another job after I'm done as a police officer. In my retirement job, I am certain to be paying into Social Security and accruing Social Security credits. How will the windfall elimination provision affect any Social Security benefits from my post-police retirement job?
Got it. So the windfall elimination provision essentially affects people like these that have worked at a job that does not participate in Social Security. They have an alternate. They call it a non-participatory or a non-participating pension, meaning it's not participating in Social Security. And when you then work another job, that generally, if that's the only job you have, you're not going to have Social Security at all, so it's not a question. But if you then work another job before, during, or after that job, anytime that does pay into Social Security, you'll establish a benefit as long as you get, you know, 40 quarters of credits, etc. All the general rules there. But let's assume he works enough and has worked enough to generate a benefit. WEP, Windfall Elimination Provision, changes the formula that they use to calculate the benefit. That's essentially what it does. Now, the maximum WEP, WEP, Windfall Elimination Provision, in 2021, this does change yearly because it's tied to what are called the bend points, which I don't want to get into because this will get really long. But the maximum WEP offset, they call it, is $498 in 2021. And what that means is it'll reduce your PIA a maximum of $498. However, unlike GPO, which he's not asking about here, unlike GPO that could completely wipe out a potential benefit, WEP will never wipe out the benefit completely, because if your benefit is low enough, they're just going to reduce it essentially in half, but they also cap the WEP offset to be no more than one half of your non-participating pension. Now, my guess is your police pension is a lot more than $1,000 a month. So you're not going to be protected from that. But if you, for instance, generate a Social Security benefit that is only $300, they're not going to offset it $500 and make it zero. They're going to make it $150, essentially, because that's the way the formula works. So it could hurt you, but it will be capped at $498. It is an annoyance. Maybe by the time you're doing it, they'll have repealed it or changed it, because there's always talk about doing that. I don't know if they will, but that's how it works. It will affect you if you do have a Social Security benefit in addition to the pension that did not participate in Social Security.
Perfect.
Okay.
I like that. All right, we got a bunch of little questions that we can go through until I run out of time. Oh, I got about 20 more minutes. That's not too bad. Yeah. Okay, so this one, like I say, these are not too deep of a question, but this one is, it could be interesting, but it's very simple way to answer. It's going to be a very simple question to answer. Why don't I just get to it?
Okay. The buildup is longer than the question.
Yeah, exactly. And then it may not be interesting, and I started going down that road thinking, oh, God, what if this isn't interesting? People are going to be thinking, that's interesting? Okay, says, hi, Jim. I hope you're doing well, and I love the part. He just totally blew you off.
Okay, I'll sit quietly.
I'll add your name. Hi, Jim and Chris. I hope you are both doing well, and I love the podcast. It's very informative. I have learned a lot. I have a question about the conversion of my 401k into a Roth IRA. I have a pension and a 401k with my current employer. In the near future, I will be ending employment. He doesn't say if he's retiring or just changing jobs. When that happens, I will roll my pension into a traditional IRA. Let's pause there. I'm interpreting pension meaning an income pension, folks, a benefit, a defined benefit plan that would pay him an income stream for the rest of his life. But he's given an option when he severs service, either through retirement or just quitting, to taking what is known as a lump sum pension benefit. In other words, the company saying, look, instead of us paying you $1,000 a month, I'm making this number up, $1,000 a month for the rest of your life, what if we give you $300,000 in a lump sum? That's what a lump sum payout is. So, Chris, that's what I'm assuming he means by the pension. Do you agree?
Possibly. It could go either way. But usually when people use the word pension, it involves the option, at least, of that monthly payout annuity rather than a lump sum. Obviously, if he's going to roll it over, they give him the option of taking the lump sum. I know where you're going with this. He better darn well make sure that that's what he wants to do before he does it.
Exactly. You again, just like the physician we spoke to earlier, I said you probably need a retirement plan because I don't know if you could benefit, if in the physician's case, of additional Social Security. In your case, listener, I don't know if you could benefit from actually having the pension rather than the lump sum. So my answer is just going to be to your question. I'm encouraging you, though, before you take a lump sum, make sure you don't need the pension. Okay. I have a pension and a 401k. In the near future, I'll be ending employment. When that happens, I will be rolling my pension into a traditional IRA. I guess he's taking the lump sum, folks, not the income. So I will have a traditional IRA and a Roth IRA at the same time. No problem, folks. He can have a Roth and he can have a traditional IRA. No problem. And he can also move the lump sum pension payout if he chooses that over the monthly benefit. He can move that tax and penalty free to his IRA and let it just sit there. No problem. So far, so good, Chris?
So far, so good.
Okay. Some point after I do all that, I would like to then take my 401k and convert it into a Roth IRA. Am I going to be taxed on just the amount I put into the Roth? Or will I be taxed not only on that, but the amount I rolled into the Roth plus what I put into my traditional IRA from my pension? Do you want to answer that one?
That is the simple aspect to this question he's got. Only the conversion into the Roth. The transfer from the pension to the traditional IRA, that's a non-taxable event. That doesn't trigger anything at all. Doesn't matter what else you do. That's an independent transaction. No tax consequences there. Conversion from a traditional pre-tax, what we call always taxable, account over to Roth, those dollars are going to be subjected to income tax because you'll report them as ordinary income in the year that you do it. And obviously be careful if it's of any size of doing a gigantic conversion in 1 year. You might regret that on your tax situation, or it might make perfect sense. We don't know because we don't have the numbers, but be aware of that. If you wanted to do it piecemeal, you would take that 401k and roll it over into an IRA, traditional IRA, and then do it a little at a time if you wanted to get it out of the 401k. You could also do it piece by piece from the 401k to a Roth IRA if you didn't want to do it lump sum whole thing. So be aware of that. It's not an all or nothing choice. You can do it in pieces. If it's hard to deal with your 401k provider, that might be a reason to roll it over to a traditional IRA to make these future conversions you're going to do a little bit easier. But only the converted amount will be subject to taxation.
Perfect. So very simple answer, but I'm still going to encourage you, listener, to make sure you don't need the pension. Again, if you're new to our show, learn a little bit about our philosophy. Chris and I are not anti-pension, anti-Social Security, anti-income annuity. We actually like all three of those lifetime sources of guaranteed income to take care of the expenses that are going to continue for the rest of your life, whether you have money or not. That's the key. You're not going to spend money on fun things if you didn't have it, but you still got to take care of your food, your housing, your transportation, your health. To us, those expenses, we call it your minimum dignity floor, should be covered with lifetime income that continues forever, even if your other money ran out. So make sure you don't need that pension before taking the lump sum. That's all I want to say.
Okay.
This next question is also fairly easy. Hi, Jim and Chris. See, this person didn't blow you off. And they are from New Hampshire. I was listening to several of your recent podcasts regarding naming beneficiaries. I added the words per stirpes on my IRA and 401k beneficiary form. I have two daughters listed 50% each as primary beneficiary, and I want their share to go to any offspring they may have if they pass away first. Does the per stirpes cause issues due to the fact that I am not actually naming the offspring as beneficiaries? Let me talk a little bit about this. If all's what you did, listener, is write the words per stirpes on the beneficiary form, I'm not sure it's going to work. You need to make sure the custodian allows a per stirpes designation. And maybe before I go any deeper, let me explain what per stirpes is. There's per capita and there's per stirpes on beneficiary forms. The default is usually per capita. But sometimes on a form, you'll see, Chris, a little box that you can check to indicate you want it per stirpes. Someone told me once, and I don't know if this is true or not, per stirpes means by bloodline. Or
that
something.
Is what that means,
okay.
Yes.
Something similar to that or by bloodline. So what it would do, if let's just say he has two daughters, right? Mm-hmm. And they're both primary beneficiaries, listeners, and it's a per capita designation, and one daughter predeceases him in life. He, in other words, he's alive, but one of the daughters dies. And then he dies. Could be a day later, could be 5 years, 10 years later. So instead of having two primary beneficiaries, there's just one. Under per capita, the custodian is going to say, okay, that daughter who was going to get 50% is alive, but this daughter who was going to get the other 50% has passed. We are going to take that 50% and give it to the remaining primary beneficiaries. In this case, there's only one. So the one daughter on that form would get 100% of the IRA or the 401k. A per stirpes designation says, okay, one daughter predeceased the father. We, the custodian, are going to first look to see if that daughter, by bloodline, which also includes legal adoption, by bloodline or legal adoption, are there any offspring that she has? If so, the 50% that would have went to her would be divided by the custodian amongst her offspring.
Yep.
That's per stirpes. Now, that is not a requirement. It's right. A lot of work for a custodian to do that.
Yeah.
Because he hit the nail on the head. You're not naming the bloodline or adopted children on the beneficiary form. Right,
as contingents, which right. is how that would normally work. Yeah.
You're just telling the custodian, hey, on your own, figure this out for me. It's a pain in the hiney, folks.
And I would suspect most don't allow that.
A lot do, though, but not
well,
all.
I mean, most don't allow you to just write it in.
Yes.
If they were going to do that, it would be
if they want you to do it,
rules.
They would have had a checkbox.
Right.
So the first thing you need to do, listener, is get a hold of your custodian and say, hey, do you honor a per stirpes beneficiary designation? If so, how do I indicate that? So you can make sure the beneficiary form is correct. That's going to be the first thing you need to do, both with your 401k and your IRA. As far as your question of would not naming the bloodline beneficiaries matter? No, that's the whole idea of a per stirpes designation. So you don't know the children, the grandchildren, your children may have for you someday. You know if there's going to be one.
Or adopt.
Or adopt. So, no problem. If a custodian allows per stirpes, that's what you have to make sure first. Let them, they'll figure it out. That's one of the reasons a lot of custodians don't want to do this. It's a lot of work for them to figure this all out.
So you can't just randomly change custodians or plan administrators for your 401k. But this is one reason to shop around for a custodian. If this is what you really want to do, shop around for a custodian for your IRA. Or in the future, maybe that this would be justification for rolling a 401k to an IRA so that you could get it somewhere that would honor per stirpes if this is important to you. Because it does exist out there. There are outfits that will do it this way.
Exactly. And we go over per stirpes and per capita in Ed Slott's class. Let me tell you, Chris, it gets confusing when you have 3, 4, 5 bloodlines mm-hmm. going. Oh, my God. It's. I will admit, listeners, I get confused as Ed's explaining it. Okay, then you have to. It's a nightmare. And I sit there thinking, my God, now I know why some custodians don't do this. it is difficult to figure out. It sounds easy until practicality you go. And then it gets really difficult, especially with a blended family. Is there a legal adoption? Is all this stuff? Mm-hmm. It gets to be a nightmare. So anyways, that's per stirpes. Now, attorneys who are listening are saying that's where a trust can come in, and that is true. And Chris and I have said that. It does make using a trust a little bit easier than a per stirpes designation. Mm-hmm. However, it doesn't escape the fact that Chris and I are generally not a fan of using trusts as beneficiaries of always taxable, or what the industry calls tax-qualified retirement accounts, IRAs, 401ks, TSPs, things like that. Because remember, folks, you see assets, the IRS sees income, and it's a royal pain using a trust with inherited income. But a trust would make this situation a little bit easier. I just wish all the money wasn't in a 401k and an IRA, but instead either life insurance proceeds or a brokerage account or a physical asset, not a retirement account. But I did want to acknowledge that in case we got an email from an attorney saying, hey, you never mentioned the trust could make this a little bit easier. That's one case where a trust can make life a little easier.
Yep. Perfect.
All right. Before we wrap up... Mm-hmm. Okay, I still got 4 or 5 more minutes. I'm going to do this solely from memory, but we received an email of a mistake Chris made on a recent podcast where he did not correct me for something I said.
I see.
So, and I'm not going to throw you under the bus too hard on that, Chris. Your job is to interpret,
monitor everything you say.
Right, what I mean, not what I say.
Yeah.
So let's be nice to Chris for making a mistake. He does that every now and then. But do you remember the show we did where we had a listener's question? I think it was the last one or the one before. And he wanted to leave money in his IRA to his grandkids. Mm-hmm. And he was wondering how the custodial situation would work out. Well, during that show, what you didn't pick up on, Chris, and it's okay, I'm not going to throw you under the bus too much. I said that if the grandchildren inherit it, that, and they were still under the age of majority, they would take distributions over their lifetime, their life expectancy rather, until they reach the age of majority, then they have to close the IRA within 10 years. I was actually testing you there, Chris.
Oh, you were?
I was.
I do remember you saying that. I thought I said something. Because at
you?
The time, I once you mentioned this now, I totally remember you saying that and thinking, well, no, they don't have to take distributions then. They don't have to take distributions until after they reach the age of majority.
No, nope. See, you...
10 years after.
No. We both screwed up. All jokes aside, folks, I did misspeak, and this listener, his name is Jeff, the guy who's going to come on and talk about mega Roth conversions, and I keep always forgetting to get him to come on. He picked up on it, and where we messed up, and this shows you folks how confusing these rules are. It only applies to kids, not grandkids. Let me explain.
Oh, I forgot
yes,
about that.
Yes, yes.
Oh.
He was talking about his grandkids.
I'm glad he brought
yes,
this up.
Yep.
Yes.
I totally missed it as well. So the rule is, folks, if you pass away, let's say this gentleman in that his email, let's say he was saying he wanted his IRA to go to his kids, not his grandkids. Mm-hmm. Here's what would happen if he had minor children. When your kids inherit your IRA and they are minors, they will take distributions under the old stretch out rules, which means by December 31st of the year following your death, they will have to take distributions under the old rules, if you will, until they reach the age of majority. Then at that point, that IRA has to be closed within 10 years. The RMDs stop and they have the 10-year rule comes in and they have to close it within 10 years. Grandkids don't count on that.
Right.
Grandkids go straight to the 10-year rule.
Yep.
And he picked up on that, and we missed it.
Yep. I plainly admit that now.
I'm trying to blame you, and I'm on a thin string.
We'll both on that, because I should have, that grandchild should have triggered my memory on that as well.
Yep.
We rarely talk about leaving or making beneficiary designations to grandchildren.
Grandkids, yeah.
We always talk about kids as contingents, but rarely grandchildren. But this listener is exactly right. And so, we have to throw ourselves on the sword to ask forgiveness from the audience.
I tried to blame you.
We screwed that one. No, I'll take blame on that one, because that is one I should have picked up on.
I should have picked up on it, too. Again, and this is one reason, folks, we have that little disclosure that plays that, you can't rely on what we're saying. We think we're giving you sound advice, but this just highlights all the confusing little rules. But there is a difference between kids and grandkids in this new law. So your kids will take it as a stretch payment, if you will, until the age of majority, which can be between 18 and 26, depending on the state and if they're in school or not, and the rule. But somewhere between 18 and 26, it will turn to the 10-year payout. Grandkids, straight to the 10-year payout.
Yep.
So he did pick up on that. Anyways, wanted to answer that.
I'm glad somebody did that.
Yep.
Perfect.
And we are going to get him on. He's listening now. He's saying, yeah, sure. We need to do this. Let's try to get him on in August sometime.
Sounds good to me.
All righty. Okay. That was about it, and I think that wraps up the show.
Yeah, perfect. So thanks, everybody, for listening. If you want to send in your own questions in order to have us take a look at them and hopefully answer them on the show, just go to our website, jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. On there, you'll find a contact form where you can submit questions and comments. You can also email Jim directly, since he's the official collector of questions. His email direct is jim@jimhelps.com. And if you make it clear in the subject line, it's a question for the show, he'll pick up on that, put it into his pile, and hopefully you'll win the lottery. I don't know how many do we end up doing versus not getting to. Do you have any sense for that?
A lot we don't get to. I mean, you saw the stack I carry with me.
Yeah.
It gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and then I will throw ones away when they get to more than a year old. We apologize, folks. We love the questions. Keep bringing them in. The long 1, 2, 3-page questions, chances are, unless it's so compelling, we want to do an EDU on it, we're not going to get to it.
Yeah.
The shorter questions, if you're pithy like I am on the show, it has a better chance of coming on. But we get far more questions, Chris. And until we can go to a second show, which we don't have the time.
Right.
It's just going to be hard, but hey, okay. At least it shows that we're helping some people, and people are benefiting from it because they keep listening. But don't delay, don't disparage. You can send questions in, and hopefully I can get to them. Social Security questions have a good chance, because we always like to lead with one or two Social Security questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, perfect. So thanks everybody for listening. We'll have a new show for you next week.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.